absolute silence on the ledge for about an hour until dawn. Then we ate food from the gourds. Don Juan said that we had to remain on the ledge until midday, and that we weren't going to sleep at all, but were going to talk as if nothing was out of the ordinary. He asked me to relate in detail everything that had happened to me from the moment he'd left me. When I concluded my narration, he stayed quiet for a long time. He seemed to be immersed in deep thought.
"It doesn't look too good," he finally said. "What happened to you last night was very serious. So serious that you can't venture into the night alone anymore. From now on, the entities of the night won't leave you alone."
"What happened to me last night, Don Juan?"
"You stumbled on some entities which are in the world and which act on people. You know nothing about them because you've never encountered them. Perhaps it would be more proper to call them entities of the mountains. They don't really belong to the night. I call them entities of the night because one can perceive them in the darkness with greater ease. They are here, around us at all times. In daylight, however, it's more difficult to perceive them, simply because the world is familiar to us, and that which is familiar takes precedence. In the darkness, on the other hand, everything is equally strange, and very few things take precedence, so we're more susceptible to those entities at night."
"But are they real, Don Juan?"
"Of course. They're so real that ordinarily they kill people, especially those who stray into the wilderness and have no personal power."
"If you knew they were so dangerous, why did you leave me alone there?"
"There's only one way to learn, and that way is to get down to business. To only talk about power is useless. If you want to know what power is, if you want to stress it, you must tackle everything yourself. The road to knowledge and power is very difficult and very long. You may have noticed that I haven't let you venture into the darkness by yourself until last night. You didn't have enough power to do that. Now you do have enough to wage a good battle, but not enough to stay in the dark by yourself."
"What would happen if I did?"
"You'll die. The entities of the night will crush you like a bug."
"Does that mean I can't spend a night by myself?"
"You can spend the night by yourself in your bed, but not in the mountains."
"What about the flatlands?"
"It applies only to the wilderness, where there are no people around, especially the wilderness in high mountains. Since the natural abodes of the entities of the night are rocks and crevices, you can't go into the mountains from now on unless you've stored enough personal power."
"But how can I store personal power?"
"You're doing it. By living the way I've recommended. Little by little, you're plugging up all your points of drainage. You don't have to be deliberate about it, because power always finds a way. Take me as an example. I didn't know I was storing power when I first began to learn the ways of a warrior. Just like you, I thought I wasn't doing anything in particular. But that wasn't so. Power has the peculiarity of being unnoticeable when it's being stored."
I asked him to explain how he'd arrived at the conclusion that it was dangerous for me to stay by myself in the darkness.
"The entities of the night moved along your left," he said. "They were trying to merge with your death, especially the door that you saw. It was an opening, you know, and it would have pulled you until you'd been forced to cross it, and that would have been your end."
I mentioned in the best way I could that I thought it was very strange that things always happened when he was around, and that it was as if he'd been concocting all the events himself. The times I'd been alone in the wilderness at night had always been perfectly normal and uneventful. I'd never experienced shadows or strange noises. In fact, I'd never been frightened by anything. Don Juan chuckled softly and said that everything was proof he had enough personal power to call a myriad of things to his aid. I had the feeling he perhaps was hinting
that he actually had called on some people as his confederates. Don Juan seemed to have read my thoughts and laughed out loud.
"Don't tax yourself with explanations," he said. "What I said makes no sense to you, simply because you still don't have enough personal power. Yet, you have more than when you started, so things have begun to happen to you. You already had a powerful encounter with the fog and lightning. It's not important that you understand what happened to you that night. What's important is that you have acquired the memory of it. The bridge and everything else you saw that night will be repeated someday when you have enough personal power."
"For what purpose would all that be repeated, Don Juan?"
"I don't know. I'm not you. Only you can answer that. We're all different. That's why I had to leave you by yourself last night, although I knew it was mortally dangerous. You had to test yourself against those entities. The reason I chose the owl's cry was because owls are the entity's messengers. To imitate the cry of an owl brings them out. They became dangerous to you, not because they're naturally malevolent, but because you were not impeccable. There's something in you that's very chintzy, and I know what it is. You're just humoring me. You've been humoring everybody all along. And of course that places you automatically above everyone and everything. But you know yourself that that cannot be so. You're only a man, and your life is too brief to encompass all the wonders and all the horrors of this marvelous world. Therefore, your humoring is chintzy. It cuts you down to a crappy size." I wanted to protest. Don Juan had nailed me, as he had done dozens of times before. For a moment, I became angry. But, as it had happened before, writing detached me enough so I could remain impassive. "I think I have a cure for it," Don Juan went on after a long interval. "Even you would agree with me if you could remember what you did last night. You ran as fast as any sorcerer, only when your opponent became unbearable. We both know that, and I believe I've already found a worthy opponent for you."
"What are you going to do, Don Juan?" He didn't answer. He stood up and stretched his body. He seemed to contract every muscle. He ordered me to do the same.
"You must stretch your body many times during the day," he said. "The more times, the better, but only after a long period of work or a long period of rest."
"What kind of opponent are you going to find for me?" I asked.
"Unfortunately, only our fellow men are our worthy opponents," he said. "Other entities have no volition of their own, and one must go to meet them and lure them out. Our fellow men, on the contrary, are relentless." "We've talked long enough," Don Juan said in an abrupt tone and turned to me. "Before we leave, you must do one thing, the most important of all. I'm going to tell you something right now, to set your mind at ease about why you're here. The reason you keep on coming to see me is very simple. Every time you've seen me, your body has learned certain things, even against your desire. And finally, your body now needs to come back to me to learn more. Let's say that your body knows that it's going to die, even though you never think about it. So I've been telling your body that I too am going to die. And before I do, I'd like to show your body certain things, things which you can't give to your body yourself. For example, your body needs fright. It likes it. Your body needs the darkness and the wind. Your body now knows the gate of power and can't wait to try it. So let's say then that your body returns to see me because I am its friend."
Don Juan remained silent for a long while. He seemed to be struggling with his thoughts. I've told you that the secret of a strong body is not in what you do to it, but what you don't do, he finally said. Now it's time for you not to do what you always do. Sit here until we leave, and not do. I don't follow you, Don Juan. He put his hands over my notes and took them away from me. He carefully closed the pages of my notebook, secured it with a rubber band, and then threw it like a disc far into the chaparral. I was shocked and began to protest, but he put his hand over my mouth. He pointed to a large bush and told me to fix my attention, not on the leaves, but on the shadows of the leaves. He said that running in the darkness didn't have to be spurred by fear, but could be a very natural reaction of a jubilant body that knew how to not do. He repeated over and over in a whisper in my right ear that to not do what I knew how to do was the key to power. In the case of looking at a tree, what I knew how to do was to focus immediately on the foliage. The shadows of the leaves or the spaces in between the leaves were never my concern. His last admonitions were to start focusing on the shadows of the leaves on one single branch, and then eventually work my way to the whole tree, and not to let my eyes go back to the leaves, because the first deliberate step to storing personal power was to allow the body to not do. Perhaps it was because of my fatigue or my nervous excitation, but I became so immersed in the shadows of the leaves that by the time Don Juan stood up, I could almost group the dark masses of shadows as effectively as I normally grouped the foliage. The total effect was startling. I told Don Juan that I would like to stay longer. He laughed and patted me on my hat. "I've told you," he said. "The body likes things like this." He then said that I should let my stored power guide me through the bushes to my notebook. He gently pushed me into the chaparral. I walked aimlessly for a moment, and then I came upon it. I thought that I must have unconsciously memorized the direction in which Don Juan had thrown it. He explained the event, saying that I went directly to the notebook because my body had been soaked for hours in not doing. 15. Not doing. Wednesday, April 11th, 1962. Upon returning to his house, Don Juan recommended that I work on my notes as if nothing had happened to me, and not to mention or even be concerned with any of the events I'd experienced. After a day's rest, he announced that we had to leave the area for a few days because it was advisable to put distance between us and those entities. He said that they had affected me deeply, although I wasn't noticing their effect yet, because my body wasn't sensitive enough. In a short while, however, I would fall seriously ill if I didn't go to my place of predilection to be cleansed and restored. We left before dawn and drove north. And after an exhausting drive and a fast hike, we arrived at the hilltop in the late afternoon. Don Juan, as he had done before, covered the spot where I'd once slept with small branches and leaves. Then he gave me a handful of leaves to put against the skin of my abdomen and told me to lie down and rest. He fixed another place for himself, slightly to my left, about 5 feet away from my head, and also lay down. In a matter of minutes, I began to feel an exquisite warmth and a sense of supreme well-being. It was a sense of physical comfort, a sensation of being suspended in mid-air. I could fully agree with Don Juan's statement that the bed of strings would keep me floating. I commented on the unbelievable quality of my sensory experience. Don Juan said in a factual tone that the bed was made for that purpose.